Hello to everybody schlepping back to your Toyota Corolla at the end of a weird weekend. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one phone call, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun, and I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hi, everybody. If you're not somebody who likes a long intro, well, the good news is this one's not that long. But if you like skipping the intros altogether, you'll want to skip about 5.5, 6 minutes. That'll put you right towards the beginning of the phone call. Thanks so much, and please consider signing up at beautifulanonymous.com. Hi, everybody. Chris Gethard here. Welcome to Beautiful Anonymous. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks to the, as of this recording, 726 people who have signed up for extra content at beautifulanonymous.com. It means the world to me. I see a lot of people enjoying it so much. And for the people at the Touchtone tier, you get a follow-up call with our old friend Parade Girl. That's right. The caller who not only told us about her success at failure, but then later got many friends onto the show. We talk all about the methods by which she manipulated the show, the joy that came from it, the stress that came from it. We talk about her potential future with the show, and then also get to know her a whole bunch through some very delightful random questions. And it was a great combo. It was great to catch up with her. If you want to hear more, you can sign up at the Touchtone tier over at beautifulanonymous.com. I'm so psyched that everybody enjoyed last week's episode. Seems like people are really feeling them lately. A lot of people were thrilled to hear about kidney donation. A lot of people yet also claiming that they have like friend of a friend connections with Dave Matthews. So who knows if that will happen? We have had other people reach out and tell us that it's just a myth that liver donation will drive you to psychosis. So please, everybody. If we misrepresented that, other people telling stories about their own donations along the way. It's a very cool episode, and so psyched. And one thing that came up was people saying that they want a photo. They want a picture of that kidney to show up in Beautiful Anonymous, the magazine. This is true, everybody. Myself and Andrea, you all know the high priestess, Andrea Quinn, who produces the show now. We are taking submissions. Print submissions only, and I want them to be physical submissions only. We're going to try to build a magazine version of Beautiful Anonymous, and I make no promises because this sounds like a thing that's probably difficult, but a lot of people seem excited. If you want to send something in, this could be a handwritten story, a typed out story. It could be art. It could be a photograph. It could be really anything that could exist in a visual medium. You send it to me. We've had some questions come up, like people saying, hey, I get a lot of mail returns, so I want to put a return address on it. Is that really anonymous? I promise you I will destroy the return address. We've had some people saying, can they email stuff? And I'm just going to say, in the same way that the phone is a sort of antiquated method of communication at this point in history that has carried this show, I really love the idea of this being physical mail. So please print it out, send it in. If it's impossible to print out and send in, then it's probably impossible for us to print anyway. And a lot of people are hoping they can get a picture of the caller's kidney as part of this magazine. So I don't know, Andrea, let's take a note. Maybe we can reach out to the kidney caller and see if we can make that happen. In fact, maybe that should be the cover, is a photo of a removed kidney. Who knows? And if you want to send something in for potential inclusion in this magazine that may or may not exist someday, just send it to Chris Gethard, P.O. Box 972, New Vernon, New Jersey, 07976. That's Chris Gethard, P.O. Box 972, New Vernon, New Jersey, 07976. And who knows? Maybe we'll make something cool. Maybe it'll become a tradition. Maybe we'll put out one or two of these a year if people like them and it goes well. This week's call, I'm very excited for you to hear. I'm going to go ahead and say first, first chunk of time, we talk about one of my favorite cities in America, Savannah, Georgia. But you'll hear at some point, I don't call it out because I didn't want to make the call. You'll hear the caller started to get in her head, started to get a little nervous at some point. And I started to sense that and figured out maybe. And she even kind of expressed, I thought we would talk about Savannah a lot more, but I realized that I'm maybe running out of things to say, something along those lines. And remember, everybody, if you call the show, it's just a conversation. We can always roll into another topic. We can always find it on our feet. That's what I'm here for, to help facilitate that. And man, do we find it. This caller spends a lot of time living in a different time period through the world, not of reenactments, but of recreation. And I learn in the course of this call, as you will, that there is a difference. And we hear about the impulse behind this, what people get out of it, the types of people that do it. You also start to hear how some dark parts of the real world bleed into it. Start to hear how newcomers are treated. It's a really fun topic. And I pointed it out at some point. It reminds me, we had a caller years ago who liked to pretend to be part of a pirate crew. Part of a pirate crew that had a captain and stuff. And I love it. I love that we got another call from somebody who escapes into an alternate reality. I think it's really interesting. I think in a lot of ways it's healthy, right? There's community, puts you in touch with nature, makes you ponder history, disconnects you from your devices. I think there's so many healthy aspects to this. But it's also so fascinating to me that we've had multiple calls now from people who go, I feel it necessary sometimes to escape the realities of my own world and go live in a world that's slightly different within my world. There's got to be something to that escapism and why we crave that as well. These are some things that we talk about explicitly on the show and that are some that remain sort of in the subconscious, but I'm very fascinated to hear everyone's opinions on them, especially over at Beautiful Anonymous, the community on Facebook, which 35,000 people having pleasant conversations, and we do not deal with too many jerks. Very rarely do we get jerks in that group. It's a lovely thing. So thanks for everybody who signed up there. Thanks to everybody who's mailed in contributions to the fanzine. Thanks to everybody who has signed up at beautifulanonymous.com. Remember, if we can get to 2,500 signups within the first year of existence, I get a nice financial bonus for myself that will help my family pay the mortgage and whatnot. So no pressure, but it's appreciated if you try. And that's that. That's the intro. Now we have the phone call. Enjoy it.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Is this Chris?
This is Chris. This is indeed. That is my name. That is a person.
I got to say it.
It is me. You nailed it.
I did it. How are you?
How am I? I'm pretty good. I have to say, I have a good life. I have a good, lucky life. Feeling good. How are you?
Awesome. Also good. Also, I have a good life. I just celebrated 20 years anniversary, actually, yesterday. So,
wedding anniversary, 20 cool years thing. Married.
Yeah, wedding. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yep.
Congrats.
Thanks. Yeah, went by. I'm like, has it only been 20 years? Wasn't it like 5 years ago this happened?
Yeah, I'm coming up on 10.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been a wild ride. But you know, I'm here for the next 20, so.
That's awesome. But, what did you just celebrate?
So, we actually have plans tonight to go to one of our favorite restaurants and have a nice dinner. And at some point later in the year, we're hoping to do some sort of trip. It is all kind of still up in the air, but we like to travel on the big anniversary. So, so just a quiet dinner, and we're gonna, you know, probably purchase a mattress because when you're an adult, you know, anniversary comes around, and you're like, what do we get each other? Oh, we need a new mattress. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah. You just go out and really party. Get a new mattress. I mean, some would say that after 20 years needing a new mattress, a sign a sign that things are good and that that mattress has been put to good use. And it's better than not needing definitely. A new mattress, right? It's better than things
That's
being
true.
Like, this mattress feels like new, unfortunately.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
I have to say, your podcast, Beautiful Anonymous, is the very first podcast I ever listened to.
Hey, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's probably a story, many people's stories. It was the pandemic. And I was like, let's check out podcasts. Podcasts are a thing that people talk about. And I just Googled the best podcasts and was looking through lists of good, you know, that sort of thing. And as soon as I saw this pop up and read the description, I'm like, I'm in. This sounds cool.
Nice. Well, we're lucky to have you.
And then binged. Thanks. Yeah. So, but I was talking with Andrea that one of the things I remember you talking about early on in the podcast was how much you liked Savannah,
yeah,
Georgia.
I love Savannah.
And I like it too. For the past 20 years, I've been living in Savannah.
That's a fascinating place to live.
It really, especially when you are not a Southerner and are from the West. And unlike what your husband says, I'm not a Yankee. I am a Westerner. But moving out East from out West was definitely a interesting experience for sure. Very fish out of water.
How'd you wind up out there?
So a private college my parents went to, that was just sort of the direction. I think they were like, you go to college and meet a boy and get married. And I did those things, just not quite exactly how I think they expected it to. But yeah, I met my now husband, and ended up living in Atlanta for a little bit. And then when we got married, we moved to Savannah. So
let me tell you why I love Savannah. You can tell me.
Which to me was like this tiny town.
Yeah. Well, it is. It is a city, but also a small town, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here's the things I love about it.
Especially because, yeah. And I was, you know, I lived in Atlanta before that. Before that, lived in Orange County. Before that, you know, like, it's, but there's a lot of cool things. I met people here that have become some of my best friends ever, you know, made some of the best relationships I've ever made. So that's cool. And it's beautiful. And it has its flaws. And, but I think it's a pretty cool place. Was there anything in particular in Savannah that you like to see or do or anything like that?
Now that you mention it, there's a lot of things I love about Savannah. I like the squares. I like the layout. It's a very mm-hmm. strange layout for a city. I find it very peaceful and calming to walk around. For anyone who doesn't know the basic history lesson, and I'm sure there's much nuance to this and even things I'm getting wrong, but effectively during the Civil War, much of Georgia and also parts of surrounding states were burned down by the Union Army as they came mm-hmm. through, but Savannah was protected. There's a famous story of when it was Sherman, I believe, right? When Sherman took Savannah, he gave it to Lincoln as a Christmas present. Mr. President, for Christmas this year, I gift you the city of Savannah. But famously, it was kind of like the town leaders came and met his army on the outskirts of town and said, hey, we surrender. Don't burn us down. So you kind of get a look at architecture and the layout of a city as it existed in the American South pre-Civil War in a way that doesn't really exist too many other places, to my knowledge, let alone a city of that size. So the history nerd in me loves that. But I also really like, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if it's talked about as much, but I was very, very into the book Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. I've read it a few times, which was famously a book that was about Savannah, but that Savannah also became sort of obsessed with the fact that they had this book about this high society murder that took place there. And you can feel it when you walk around that it's this weirdly tourist city, and it's this very old, dignified city. But it also seems like a place where everybody kind of knows each other's business. Like, it still feels like a very small town. And I like it for all those reasons. It's a culturally very fascinating place, and I've long had a place in my heart for Savannah, Georgia. I even once took an Amtrak train from New York City to Savannah, and I worked on a book the whole time, and then I stayed in Savannah, and I would wake up in the morning, and I'd go to one coffee shop, and then I'd walk through the park and past a bunch of squares up to another coffee shop, and I'd have lunch there, and I worked all day on my book, and it was lovely.
Yeah, I that's one of those things I still do sometimes, is just go downtown, pick a square, or go to the Forsyth, or bring the dog. We walk around. I can tell you definitely it's different, of course, living there as a not as a tourist, but actually living here. I had to giggle because, you know, it definitely is one of those places where it feels like everyone knows everyone's. It definitely feels small town in that way. It also has, I feel like we're swinging towards the other end of catering to the visitors, to the tourists. There's sort of always that push and pull. It just seems like there's a hotel being built every time you turn around, where a really cool pub or restaurant used to be. That's, my concern there. But the tourists bring in the money and keep the city going. So, it's always kind of two sides of the same coin on that. And it's affectionately called a chocolate city and a rainbow city. We are one of the two blue dots in the red of Georgia. So there's still lots of good music. There's the music festival that comes in and everything. But it was definitely an interesting place to get used to, because everything runs so much slower here than like in a big city. I don't know. Now I'm rambling.
Yes. Did you want to talk about Savannah? Because I can talk about Savannah for an hour. Or is this the warm up as we head towards something else?
Well, it's interesting because I did mention wanting to talk about Savannah, but now I'm like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's going the place maybe I thought I wanted it to go. But the other thing I mentioned was that I also, speaking of history, I am part of a group that does historical recreation. And so that's kind of my big hobby that I do.
Am I right in thinking this is where you like go to a place and you set up and you dress up as blacksmiths and wear colonial garb and act as if it is many years ago so that people can experience history in a present living sense?
Similar, but okay. Our time frame is concentrated mostly on the Renaissance and Middle Ages and even earlier. But when it was started, it very much started with the Middle Ages. So, and we also, to get nerdy on you, we recreate instead of reenact. So,
okay. I didn't mean to offend.
Elements of history. No. It's all good.
That's like when people call them skits instead of sketches, and comedians get all in a kerfuffle about it.
Yeah.
So you recreate the Middle Ages. Where do you do this?
all over. Often we use state parks or other parks, and we'll set up our tents. And we don't do it generally for an audience, unless it's going to be like a demo specifically for an audience. Anyone can come to our events and participate, but you have to participate. It's not a spectator thing. We ask that you come and actually be a part of it. So it's kind of different from Ren Fairs in that respect.
This is very interesting to me. So you do this, but everyone's participating, so no one's watching. So you're really just in it and interacting with other people in it. And is that the hobby, that the people participating in it participate in it, and that's the hobby, or is it to some greater end?
Yeah, so, well, we are technically a nonprofit, so education is important. But it's sort of a hobby that encompasses a bunch of different hobbies. Because you can have people who research and, you know, create dishes that used to be eaten, and people who recreate, there are blacksmiths and leather workers, and we calligraphy. We actually have a combat, a sport, a martial sport, where participants will put on armor and hit each other.
I'm familiar with this. I met a guy who did this.
Yeah.
And he reached out to me. We wound up doing a comedy show where he brought his armor and he fought a friend of mine. And he told me there's like a whole scene of people who do sort of like medieval style combat, but they really go at it.
Yeah. There's no predetermined winner. So, in our game, it's up to the person who got hit to determine if that's good or not. And of course, you know, you're wearing armor and protected. But we do that. That sort of represents, we use rattan to represent like swords. And then we also have a style where it's more, it's fencing. So you're using an actual like rapier just with a blunt tip. That's a completely different style.
And what corner of medieval recreation do you dwell in? Because you said there's people with hobbies within hobbies. So I get that. Like if you're looking to be exploring medieval fighting, medieval recipes and cooking, what's your area of interest?
I kind of dabble in a lot of things, but I don't want to get too in the weeds because I'm what affectionately people call a nerd among nerds, but I like heraldry. And in our game, you can actually have your own heraldry, your own name. You create a persona and you can have your own name and your own, coat of arms.
Wait, and you have to explain what heraldry is to me. What's heraldry?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. So, what's on the shield and what's on like the guy, like in medieval times, the guy who's got like a logo on his shield. And And even still today, like in England, you know, they still actually like have somebody that keeps track of all their heraldry. And it's still being used. But I always say it's like your own kind of logo. Like this is me, this is who I am.
Got it.
And it was usually done. Yeah. So
the original personal branding.
Right. And then, you know, the heralds would be the ones who would tell the king, like, okay, you know, these people, okay, those are your friends. Okay, I recognize that those are your enemies. And that was one of the jobs that in period heralds had, was to keep all that memorized and let the king or nobles know, you know, who was on their side and who wasn't.
That is nerdy, even within the context of medieval recreation.
I know.
You're aware of this.
I am aware of this. Yeah.
Now, can I ask, when you go and do this, how long do people go out into a state park and exist as if it's medieval times? And I imagine you're staying in character pretty much the whole time when you're in there.
Yeah. So a lot of time, it kind of depends on the region. Like here in the South, often we'll do 3 day, like over the weekend. Come in like late Friday and then leave like Sunday morning type of thing. Some of our events are just for 1 day. And there are places that are, I know, like out in California. And so there are some other more densely populated areas. They have more of those day events. And sometimes there are week long, or the longest one actually is 2 weeks long, events.
What's the longest one you've done?
I've done the 2 week one.
You have. And do people stay in character the whole time? Or do you like catch the guy who's really into falconry checking his phone when he thinks no one's looking?
So there's varying levels of kind of how people stay in. And there's also an internal debate about whether or not what we do is called LARPing. Because I don't think it is, because I don't consider myself playing a character. It's just sort of like, who would I be in the past kind of thing. And then other people are like, oh no, what we totally do is totally LARPing. So, and you know, there's definitely, I'll have my phone on me so I can tell the time, but I'll hide it in something that's not modern. But there are people who will create camps, encampments, where as soon as you cross into their encampment, if you're going to stay there, you need to, you know, no, nothing modern needs to show. Not even like your conversation has to leave the modern world behind. So it's, I think it's accessible in that way, that you can take it to whatever level you feel comfortable with.
I really like this. I like hearing, because even as you've explained some of the things that it's not, but that it's easily comparable to, you start to realize that within your world, there are probably some people that are like, yeah, no, I go to Renaissance fairs too. And there's some people that are like, don't bring up Renaissance fairs. Those are commercial enterprises where people are just trying to sell big turkey legs. And it's like a bunch of theater kid nonsense. Like there's definitely people out there. When you bring up LARPing, like there are probably absolutely many people who grew up playing Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons and see this as an extension of it.
Yeah.
And other people going,
yeah,
I have put so much time into learning my history. Please do not compare me to a goddamn card game. I'm not rolling dice out here. We're not hitting each other with big foam spells. What is this? I'm not a half-elven ranger. And let's pause right there, because I'll tell you what, I am a half-elven ranger. Every time I've ever played D&D, I like to be a half-elven ranger. That is my chosen character to play. Friends of mine have made fun of me for it, but I stand by it. I like being a half-elven ranger. What is that? You can Google it. Or maybe some of these ads will explain it to you, so you better not fast forward this time. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Specifically, grown-ups. I wanted to tell you about the Cat in the Hat cast, which is a new podcast from our friends at Wondery. Wondery has been very supportive of Beautiful Anonymous, and I love that we get to tell you about so many of their shows. This show, by the way, is perfect for the whole family, and I know there's a lot of parents who listen. You're going to want to join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes quite clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast. Those plans are not quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help. He gets fish out of all kinds of predicaments. This podcast bursts with music, silliness, rhymes, things that are going to entertain you while also entertaining the kids. The Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every single episode. You can sing along to songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Thanks to all of our advertisers who helped the show exist. Now let's get back to the phone call. I'm not rolling dice out here. We're not hitting each other with big foam spells. What is this? I'm not a half-elven ranger.
Yeah. I always say there's no magic. We don't have magic. But I have done Vampire the Masquerade. I've actually dabbled in a little bit and played a live action game, so which is indeed LARPing. And after that experience, I'm like, oh yeah, what I do is definitely not LARPing. But this hobby is how I met my husband, actually. So,
really,
I've been doing it for over 20 years.
Did you meet? And like you said, you're not playing a character. You view it more as an extension of yourself, as you would exist in medieval times. Yes. were you yourself? Because there is a funny thing too, right? Before we even get into that, because I want to know more about that. There has to be a very funny scene that unfolds where if you've been out there for 3, 4, 5 days and you're in the woods and you're carting water around and people are cooking on big, people cooking in cast iron pots and fighting while dressed in armor. But then when it's over, there is a very hilarious image in my mind, which is at some point everybody just like schleps back to their Honda Civics and their Toyota Corollas. And packs all that shit up in the trunk and then gets in the cars and drives away. And that's got to be a pretty funny moment to come out and be like, oh, now all these people are going to go back to their day jobs. Like everybody's going back to their cubicles on Monday.
yes, definitely. Hit the Waffle House on the way home.
right.
Being in Savannah, we have to drive pretty far to get to certain places. Fuel up at the Waffle House on the way home, but that is definitely not lost, on us. But a lot of people do it for that reason, to get away from modern life. And there's a lot of people who do this who are like, do computer work and stuff like that, who use it as a way to just go back to a simpler time.
I love that.
And I do have to say that, of course, things back then were not just so hunky-dory. We play the game basically leaving all the bad parts out, where, everyone is equal and we don't have the plague. Well, besides the modern one.
Right.
And,
but there's, you don't ever run like a plague scenario. Nobody's ever run like a, some people will be stricken with the plague and we're going to start to see how everyone has to adjust around it out in the woods.
I have not experienced anything that, what I've experienced has been more on like a game end of things. Like, if somebody tags you with a little, piece of a fabric or something and gets you, then you've got the plague. But it's all been more in a sort of game situation rather than, actually sort of seriously contemplating how this might work. People may have done that, but I have not come across that in my experience.
Now, when you and your husband met, were you again, not in character, because you've made it clear you don't view yourself as being in character, but were you within the parameters of the recreation, or were you in the real world when you met? You know what I mean?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. No, it was at an event. So we did meet at an event.
How many days were you out there getting to know each other in the context of medieval life before emerging into the real world and getting to know each other?
It was one of those weekend events. So we had basically most, you know, all of Saturday and then a little bit of Sunday as we were packing up to leave. And actually it was, you know, we were living in two different cities at the time. You know, a couple hours from each other. And so we stayed in touch like modernly, you know, through email and, decided to, we wanted to keep seeing each other. And then, you know, then I was like, oh, you know what? I think I want to like keep seeing you. I think I want to stay out east and continue down this path. So, yeah.
And do you find, how would I want to phrase it? When you are doing this thing that requires committing to an alternate reality and you meet someone within the alternate reality, you said it was just a day and a half or so, but are you starting to get the sense of like, oh, this guy's cute and I might have a crush on him within the alternate reality? And then is he like, hey, you think I could get your number on the way out? Like, how does that, cause that, and you also must be going, am I only attracted to him in the sense of how he's interacting with this alternate reality we all participate in? Or am I still going to find him intriguing and cute when we all get back to our real lives? Do you have those thoughts or am I overthinking it?
No, that's actually, yeah, good thoughts. I don't know how much I was thinking about that at the time. But yeah, it was, you know, we ended up, when we started like dating for real, we ended up, planning something that was modern for us to do together. As a way to hang out. So then we got to know each other sort of outside of that context.
And how often does your husband still participate? Are you both active within this together?
Currently, right now, we are.
Yeah, yeah. And how many days a year do you do this?
It kind of depends. Right now, things are pretty active for us. And I've gone to two events so far this year. I've got three more that I'm going to before the end of May, plus a demonstration that our local group is going to do.
Is it fair to say that you put more than 20 days a year into this hobby?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So then 20 years, 20 days, you've spent well over a year of your actual life living as if it is medieval society. You have existed for well over a year of your human life within medieval society. Even though it is 2024. That's just a true fact when you add up the time.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, you're right.
Damn. That's pretty cool.
It's a pretty cool thing.
Do you ever feel like, are there times where like you and your husband are in an argument in real life? Like he's been letting the dishes pile up, or, you know, he's been irritated because of X, Y, and Z. And then you get out into medieval life and it's a reprieve because you're subtly different in the medieval world than the real world? And if so, do you ever go back to like, oh, God damn, I don't want to go back to the real world where this jerk isn't doing the dishes?
I have experienced something like that where, you know, maybe there were stresses or, you know, something going on, you know, an argument or something before, and then we go to the event. And most of the time, actually, that kind of is a nice, like, reset. And so it's less dreading going back and more, this gives us just a different perspective on things. And, you know, I'm always just so much more relaxed in that setting. So then, you know, going back, then it's like, okay, well now let's just start over. And forget what happened and, you know, move on. But if for us, it's very much a vacation. So, yeah.
And do you feel like, which do you feel like is the truer version of yourself at this point? Are you escaping into the fantasy of this sort of role playing, or is the real life the one where you're pretending more?
I mean, I definitely feel like I'm more in the real world, quote unquote, real world. But a large majority of my friends are in this hobby, and so I see them both in that context and out. And a lot of my artistic expression is in the context of this game. And so it does, you know, bleed into the real world. There's less of a hard line between the two, that's for certain.
We did an episode probably a few years back at this point with a woman who participated in a group that acted like pirates on the weekends, and they didn't have a boat.
Yes.
They would just hang out and they were pirates. And it strikes me as a similar vibe with a different, maybe not even, I mean, a different focus on time period and activity, but a similar, let's pick a culture and a time period that's not this one and escape into it. Now, when you hear about the pirate people, is there a part of you that's like, yeah, I get it. They're like our pirate cousins. Or are you like, nah, those are a bunch of dorks. That's a totally different thing.
Oh, no. When I first heard that episode, actually, I was like, oh, I wonder if they've ever been to, you know, some of our, the biggest event that we do, draws people from all over, and there's a lot of different elements to it, and there are plenty of people who do pirate stuff, and I've always wondered if that group ever went to this event and did, you know, and did their pirate stuff, because and you know, there's plenty of people who, because you know, the pirate time frame is a little outside of what my particular, you know, group does. But there's plenty of people who skirt that line. I just, you know, I definitely think of it more as cousins rather than, you know, something different or something weird. So
are there any groups you look at in life where you're like, those, I'm sorry, but they're just fucking dorks? Like, are there any people that you look at, like, these Pokemon people, the grown-ups who still do Pokemon, come on? Or is that just, it's not how you think based on your chosen, admittedly lovably dorky hobby? I mean, you do heraldry. You do heraldry on the weekends. Like, but you can be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are the big dorks in your eyes? Be honest.
Well, Pokemon was before my time, so I do have some friends who play it. I think, you know, because I don't want to disparage anyone in their how they want to spend their time, but I definitely, after my experience LARPing, I'm like, I don't get it. This is weird.
And we should explain.
This is awkward and weird. And
I've never done LARPing, but for anybody who I had some friends who were really hardcore D&D people in high school and college. I never got totally into it. I've played a bunch of times and I like D&D well enough, but I've played a lot less based on how many comic books that you'd think based on how many comic books I've read in my life and owned. But LARPing, the broad strokes of it are, if you know about D&D where you're rolling dice to figure out if you can execute a potion or defeat a particular enemy or monster, there is a version where people dress up and they go off in the woods and they have foam weapons and things that represent spells that they can throw at each other. And my understanding is they will meet up in the woods and very often will roll a bunch of dice, like come upon each other while dressed up in outfits and then roll dice to see how the battle goes and then stage that battle. I'm sure I'm getting some of that wrong, but those are the broad strokes I always heard about. Was that your experience when you tried LARPing?
Yeah, so like I said, the only time I really did it was with the Vampire Masquerade. And that was done with, we did do it with dice, but my friends, when they were doing it, they did rock, paper, scissors, actually, for a lot of situations. And, you know, I like D&D. I actually got into it pretty late in life. But I love to play D&D. I love role-playing games.
LARPing is live-action role-playing.
Live-action role-playing, yeah, yeah. And so I like the tabletop version, but once you go live-action with it, I'm like, not my thing.
Yeah, so just so you know, if you're out there listening and you're really into LARPing, we need you to call the show to let us know your mindset, because we are not people who judge on this show. And I don't get the sense that you're very clear in saying it's just not for you. But that being said, I do want to know, LARPers, if you're out there listening, a person who likes to pretend she exists in medieval times and work on heraldry thinks you're a bunch of fucking dorks. So call up and defend yourself, my LARPing friends.
Oh, man. I'm going to start a medieval nerd war.
I would love it. I would love nothing more than to be responsible for that.
Yeah.
Yes. And anyone who's listening, let's keep in mind, too, before the LARPing people latch onto it, it's me causing the fight. All our caller said was she tried it, and it's not her thing. And then I'm the one who has repeatedly referred to you as, quote, fucking dorks. Sorry, Sally, that's on me, not our caller.
Yeah, I have not said that. Yeah.
But I am also, I will say this too, even as we discuss it, because I find it very funny, like, because look, I mean, if you know what I look like, I'm certainly a nerd myself. And I mean, I've in my attic, I've got, I think I counted them up, of thousands of comic books, like thousands of comic books in my attic, and an obsessive knowledge of Star Wars growing up. And I was of the age where there was that window where Star Wars had become very dorky and not cool again yet. It was not a good thing to like Star Wars. Yeah. Now the fact that every kid likes Star Wars and wrestling and Marvel, I'm like, I used to get antagonized for liking those things. I'm glad the world has changed. But it is very funny that when you get into the nerdy world, there are these divisions between different camps of dorks and nerds. Like, I love comic books, but some of the behavior I see at gaming stores, I'm like, I don't know if I want to bring my 4-year-old son to a gaming store. Because I don't need him seeing like a 50-year-old man flipping out and cursing and slamming his fists on a table because he didn't tap the right mana in his magic round. You know, like, there's times where I just see people who are like yelling. And I think there is a little bit of a comic versus gaming nerd. There's people who cross over to both, but there's some people that are like, nah, those are two different sides of the fence and we don't always get along. And I'm sure there's many divisions in the reenactment world similarly.
Yeah, definitely. You know, because kind of on the opposite side, we definitely also distinguish ourselves from like the Civil War reenactors, you know, because we're not that strict, basically. So
I also have to imagine, too, living in the South. And is Savannah considered the Deep South? Is Georgia the Deep South? I think so. Yeah. Like
Georgia, I would consider, especially the more rural parts, Savannah, I think the city proper is a little more of an oasis.
Right, politically. But being, when you're in Georgia and you're running into Civil War reenactors, I'm sure you also have to wonder, who's doing this because they're a history nerd like I am? Who's doing this because they want to dress up in a Confederate uniform and that might be a little bit weird? Like, you have to wonder, I'm sure, too, with Civil War reenacting in the South, what exactly people are celebrating at times. Ooh, boy, that's an ooh, boy moment. What exactly are people celebrating at times? You'd think that we could leave our divisions at the door when it comes to historical recreation of Renaissance times. But apparently real life shows up there too. We're going to hear about that and a lot more when we get back. Thanks again to all the advertisers that help us bring the show to the world. Now let's finish off the phone call.
The city proper is a little more of an oasis.
Right, politically. But being, when you're in Georgia and you're running into Civil War reenactors, I'm sure you also have to wonder, who's doing this because they're a history nerd like I am? Who's doing this because they want to dress up in a Confederate uniform and that might be a little bit weird? Like, you have to wonder, I'm sure, too, with Civil War reenacting in the South, what exactly people are celebrating at times.
So here's the thing. I have learned a lot of things moving to the South. Misconceptions and stereotypes blown out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing is, unfortunately, racism, misogyny, all that. But especially people who are getting into reenactment for those wrong reasons, that's actually kind of an epidemic in the recreation groups. All groups
really
are to deal with that.
So you're saying even in the medieval reenactment world, which, you know, have the Civil War one is obvious, but you're saying there might be dudes signing up because they like the way women were treated back then and they want to spend a weekend calling a woman a wench and saying, no, that's just how it was back then.
And it even can be more insidious than that, where people culturally appropriate symbols of like Norse symbols.
Like some white power
use it
stuff
as a way to justify white supremacy. And so that's the struggle that our group is, you know, is battling, because we, you know, majority of us want this to be open to anyone. But it's something that, you know, is something to recognize. And it's not just the South.
Of course not. It's everywhere. But I'll tell you, because I've known that white supremacists have started to reclaim like Nordic mythology and rune symbology and all that, and that's become a thing of, okay, if you see that stuff out in the world, you're going to want to take a hard, long look at those people because they might be sending a white power message. Never would have imagined that in the world of recreations, there might be people that go, well, we're a crew of Vikings. And then they leave it to you to go, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? You want to be the Vikings? And that might show up there. That's really sad and totally fascinating.
Same with a crusade. Anyone who, you know, I always kind of like, if anyone I know really wants to get into doing the crusades, you know, because again, it's like, what are your motives for that?
Right. I would imagine there might be some people that are like, this is my way to just say a whole bunch of stuff about Muslim people. But I'm in character. That's how it was back then. Meanwhile, you're dressed as a Knight Templar. Yeah. You're out here dressed as one of the Knights Templar.
Exactly.
The drama. Who knew?
And you know, it's just a microcosm of our greater society. You know, and we went through our trials and tribulations during the pandemic. Again, just sort of reflecting what was going on in the real world. And so, as much as we do try and use it as an escape, but there are people who say people of color that want to join us and have fun and play, that they can't leave the color of their skin behind. You know, that is coming with them through the gate. And so they will be dealing with those things and can't just say, oh, well, we're just pretending that all the bad bits of history, you know, didn't happen. And I'm not explaining it well, but that's something I have learned through listening to people's experiences, is that, and you know, just there are those of us who just try and make it as welcoming and accepting as we can.
I would not have guessed that the swirling dynamics of race and misogyny would show up in what seems like a game that's pure escapism. I would never have guessed that at the beginning mm-hmm. of this call. And now that I know that, mm-hmm. I'm not shocked. But man, what a way to pull mm-hmm. a curtain back. I have to imagine the majority of the people doing this are just like big old history nerds who also like the outdoors. I have to imagine the majority are good-hearted people.
Yeah, yes. I mean, the majority of people that I've interacted with, yes, definitely. But, you know, like, it just takes a few bad actors to
make a bad weekend. So all of a sudden, everyone's having a shitty weekend because some Viking shows up and you're like, mm-hmm. what's your deal? I saw the bumper stickers on your Corolla and I don't love that you're acting like a Viking if that's your bumper stickers. What, we all got to pretend that we didn't see those bumper stickers on your Corolla? No, I mentioned them before.
I want to put it out there.
Oh, yeah, put it out there. Put what out there?
Oh, I was going to say, put it out there that I know plenty of awesome Viking people who do Viking personas, so.
I'm sure no one's more pissed. No one's more pissed about the racist Vikings than the non-racist Vikings, right? No right. one.
Yeah.
I mentioned them before. Do you get falconry people? Do you get the falconry people who show up?
So I'm sure there are people that do that. I do know someone actually who plays this game, and does that for their real job, is manages wild birds. And I know people have like researched making the hoods or the leather accoutrement for what they would have used back then for falcons. Mm-hmm. You can have a falcon as on your heraldry. So I don't know anyone personally who actually does falconry, but I'm sure it exists.
I'm shocked there's not falcon people showing up with their falcons. And then if you're in the campsite next to them, you're like, oh, God. Damn it, these falcons they start going nuts at the crack of dawn. I want to sleep in tomorrow. But I got next to the falcon guy.
We do have horses.
God. People bring horses?
We have equestrian events. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Not combat, but mm-hmm. the type of thing where you take your spear and get it through the ring, or I've seen, oh man, one of the coolest things I ever saw was people on horseback pulling a little chariot, and then there were archers in that chariot who were shooting at hay bale targets.
That sounds cool. Are you familiar with Medieval Times, which is the medieval-themed dinner theater in Lyndhurst, New Jersey, among other places, but I've been to the one in Lyndhurst, New Jersey. Are you familiar?
Yes, well, I have been to. I used to work like in daycare long, long ago, and that was one of the activities we did with the kids, was taking them to Medieval Times. I did that before I got into this.
You did
historical group. So.
Did you take them to the one in New Jersey?
No, out west, out in California.
Is that like something you roll your eyes so hard at? Because I've always marveled at the fact that in Lyndhurst, New Jersey, there's a nightly show where people dress up as knights and fight each other, and then you eat chicken with no utensils. And then there's a whole show with a king and a princess. Do you see that? And you're like, more power to you. Not my thing, everybody.
It's not something I would seek out. And I think largely because, well, I have access when I do it, it's I'm participating. So it's different, but also there are some historical inaccuracies. I don't want to burst anyone's bubble, but as just a fun family event, I mean, the kids absolutely loved it when we would take them. So, but yeah, people had utensils. They just didn't eat all with their hands. And then, again, turkey legs, really at that point, only the richest of the rich, maybe the king might have had access to that because turkeys are a New World food. So
now when you're out there eating to medieval standards, what's the menu?
So interestingly, the like palate, specifically, if you're specifically talking like European, like Renaissance, Middle Ages, there was a lot of like combining like sweet and savory. So like you'd have like a roast with like a raisin sauce or something like that. I've had an excellent leek and bacon soup, leeks, onions, and bacon. I've had actually a lot of really good food from people who use their volunteer time to make food for everybody, and often will research it and create it from historical recipes. I can't think of anything so specific just because I'm like, I've eaten so much good food. But that is a big part. There's a lot of people who do that. And I think the main thing is that sort of combination of sweet and savory that we don't see very often in the modern palate. Spices are a little different. If anyone knows the YouTube channel, Tasting History, it's actually got a lot of good recipes on there that I'm like, oh, I'm familiar with that one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now when you're out there and you realize that someone is there and it's their first time,
mm-hmm.
I have to imagine people are like, oh, cool, we got to make it a real good immersive experience for these people. That would be cool if they came back. Do you ever see first timers who mm-hmm. get like an hour and a half in and are like, this is not my thing. I feel weird. I'm going to go put my jeans back on. I'm going to go put on my jeans and my sneakers. I think I'm going to get out of here. You ever run into that?
I've seen people who have maybe come out for an event or two and then just not come back because it wasn't their thing. Some people have had, unfortunately, one of their first experiences is like somebody was a jerk to them, so then they didn't come back. But oftentimes, I mean, it does happen. And I think sometimes too, there's some of the activities, for a lot of activities that can be kind of an upfront cost to it to mm-hmm. participate. Mm-hmm. So that could be a barrier to some people, especially in the area I'm in. Takes time. And maybe if your partner is, you're into it, but your partner's not into it. Some people don't come back because of that. But the people who do like are into it, are into it. So, and stick around.
I love it. I love getting a glimpse into this corner of the world.
Yeah. It's a fun corner. I certainly didn't expect to find it to be in this corner, but
Really? It's, so were you interested in this time period when you found out that there was this whole recreation world, or is it something that just blindsided you decades ago?
It kind of just, yeah, I mean, like I, you know, had done a few tangential things like medieval times, or one time we did a, like a little medieval party when I was younger and did like the Cornish hens for everybody. But yeah, it was kind of like a friend who was like, you should come and do this thing. And then we did this thing and I'm like, this exists? Wow, this is really cool. And then met a boy and then, you know, stuck around like you do.
And do you change before you head back to the car, or do you drive home in your Renaissance era clothes?
It depends. If we're, you know, a longer event, we've got, you know, we'll have time to change. If it's a shorter trip, a shorter event, sometimes just drive, often driving there already dressed and then change maybe to drive home.
Yeah.
I mean, my very first event, I found myself getting lunch at a Piggly Wiggly in the garb I was wearing.
And love that.
And that was an interesting experience.
Now, 20 years ago, you get married. 20 years ago yesterday, are you in Renaissance era wedding garb, or was it a modern wedding?
No, it was a modern wedding. I know plenty of people who have done that.
Oh yeah, I bet.
But we wanted a modern wedding. So
have you done heraldry for your own family? Have you done heraldry for you and your husband, for your family unit?
Well, my family doesn't participate, my hubby and I did our heraldry like before I had gotten into it. But I have done it for other friends who are in the hobby, and help them register.
You have to register it?
Names and. So I didn't want to get too nerdy on you, but yeah, in this group, you can, you know, have your own unique name and arms registered. And so part of being a herald is to be able to, when someone wants to register something new, make sure it doesn't conflict with what somebody else has.
How does one choose what's on their coat of arms?
You know, it's a good question. Oftentimes it can be maybe something you're interested in, you know, like a hobby within the hobby that you're interested in. You can think of maybe the persona, and so the culture that your persona comes from, and that might influence it. You might be like, oh, these colors are pretty, I'm going to do that. So a lot of factors can go into it. A lot of times people choose heraldry kind of based on their interests, and use that as a starting point. So
based on what you know of me, what would you recommend if you were helping me design my heraldry? We have 1 minute left.
Oh gosh. I mean, I know you're super interested in the falconry stuff, but I would have to be, I think, maybe a musical instrument, or I was trying to think of something that might represent like a microphone or someone talking. But because you can have like a human head. But I don't know, maybe the falcon, just because I know you seem really excited about that.
I just think it's funny. I was once in Ireland and visited the grounds of a castle, and they had falconry classes, and I thought about getting my brother falconry classes as a gift. And then just to see the look on his face of like, you have to travel to Ireland and go take these falconry classes if you want to cash in this gift, just to see what his reaction would be. and to see if he would actually do it, to see if he'd be like, all right, I guess I'll book a trip to Ireland so I can go train birds. See if he'd call my bluff on that. That would be pretty funny.
Sounds fun to me.
No, I know I've brought up falconry in a strange amount of times, but it's not a particular interest of mine. We can leave it off my crest.
Right, right.
Now, caller, our time is up for the free feed. Yeah. But here's what I love is that so far what we've learned, two big pieces of information about you, is that you live in Savannah, even though you didn't grow up there, and that sometimes on the weekends you like to dress up and pretend that you're living in the Renaissance in Europe. And those are two huge things that can obviously fill an hour. But we're going to say goodbye to everybody on the free feed. And for everybody who has signed up at beautifulanonymous.com, the episode will continue. We'll discuss this a little bit more. And most importantly, we'll also have five random questions, which I'm so excited about because they will deal with things in your life that have nothing to do with your recreation hobbies nor your chosen city of residence. And I hope everybody signs up at beautifulanonymous.com to learn more. Caller, thank you so much for letting us into both your real world and the real world of your fantasy world. If that makes sense, it means a lot that you shared everything with us. And I truly appreciate the call. Thank you to the High Priestess, Andrea Quinn, who produces the show. Thank you to Shell Shag, who gives us our theme music. If you want to know more about me, got some very exciting tour dates coming down the pike later in the year. Keep an eye at chrisgeth.com. Our voicemail line is 973-306-4676. If you have a story that you feel like is not represented on the show, we want to have you. If we record at times that don't work for you, maybe we can figure something out. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at Beautiful Anonymous Pod. This week on Beautiful Anonymous Plus, here's some of what you'll get from the five questions.
Do you ever get the ones where your teeth fall out?
Oh, I've had a lot of dreams about my teeth falling out. Yeah. Yeah. I have the one.
I don't get nightmares, but those are the worst ones.
Yeah. I also have, I still routinely have ones where I'm in high school, realize that I'm in a final for a class I haven't taken yet. I have that one a lot. I used to have one where I would be trying to punch someone in the face and couldn't complete the punch, and I would wake up and my shoulders would be sore. That was in my 20s, and I'd realize, oh, I was actually like holding that position in bed. Yeah, not good. Anyway, next question. What's the worst thing you've ever smelled? Don't forget to sign up for Beautiful Anonymous Plus at beautifulanonymous.com.